from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's good news and it's bad news. And I'm not talking about the hum in the studio. It's good news and it's bad news, I say. It all wrapped in one. You know about the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico? I have discussed it at other times on this broadcast. It is an area of the Gulf of Mexico where there's no oxygen. So there's no living things, you see. Hence the name, dead zone. And the news is that it's less than half the size it was predicted to be earlier this year. That's the good news. The bad news is it's also unusually severe. So put the champagne on ice, but don't open it. The area forms every year in the Gulf. It's caused by bacteria feeding on algae blooms. The blooms occur because of the flow of runoff from farms in the Midwest. Hello, Chicago. And other nutrients from the Mississippi River and its feeder rivers. This year's area covers 3,000 square miles. It's unusually thick, stretching from the bottom nearly to the top, the surface, that is to say. This is according to Nancy Rabelais. You got to love these Louisiana names. A researcher who specializes in the problem for Louisiana University's Marine Consortium, Nancy Rabelais. The 3,000 square miles is one of the smallest dead zones since measurement began way back in 1985. Only 3 years were smaller. Scientists had predicted this year's dead zone would cover 7,500 to 8,500 square miles. Imagine the happiness of the fish. Possible reasons for the difference: high winds and waves that help mix more oxygen into some waters. The some areas where oxygen was lowest, according to Rabelais, crabs, eels, and shrimp, which usually live on the bottom, were seen swimming at the surface.
Hey, look, there's sunlight up here.
Other studies indicate severely low oxygen levels early in July contributed to jubilees. Not what you think. It's jubilees in this context means the forced movement of fish, crabs, and shrimp into shallow waters. That's a jubilee. Y'all invited. Stop dumping that stuff into the rivers up north, would you? Thank you. Oh, by the way, it's not just the Gulf of Mexico. That's the most well-known and largest dead zone. There are more than 250 such areas in the United States alone. Thank you for dumping. And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, Def, no Def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland. Got to be so careful where you stand. In the digital wonderland.
Well, we're well into this thing now. There's no turning back. So let's just give into it. Dear Harry, says David, love the show. You've been focused on the impact of the digital conversion on over-the-air viewers, but did you know it's affecting cable viewers as well? Comcast, David's writing from Northern California, decided that being digital was so much fun for everybody, not on cable, that they should ape it for their customer base. So in the Bay Area, they're making everyone convert over to digital converter boxes, even if they have an old analog TV. They have two classes of converter box, the real one that has a zillion features that don't work, and the fake one that doesn't have any features. And both of these boxes crash in wonderful ways. For instance, every time there's a power failure, the fake features boxes forget who they are and don't change channels anymore. You're stuck with whatever it thinks you were watching last, or some random channel that chooses all on its own. The remote for that box has only a few buttons, which is good, but they're too small for Oldster's fingers, and you can't use anybody else's remote control with big buttons. The full-featured digital box, on the other hand, has a really incomprehensible remote that's incompatible with TiVo boxes, so changing channels takes several seconds, and you think it's broken, even though it isn't. Going to video on demand on Channel 1 puts the system into I can't hear you anymore mode, so you can't stop and restart a video on demand movie. It might as well be on broadcast. So the Comcast conversion is a huge step backward in the ease of use for old people, and it offers no usable features. But it does have the wonderful benefit of a lower sound level. Dear Harry, writes Matthew, I live in Denver where there are two PBS stations in addition to the Big Three networks. Before the transition, I could receive both PBS channels as well as the Big Three. Now, after purchasing the converter box, I receive the Big Three, 10 Spanish and 6 Jesus channels. I only watch PBS with my 4-year-old daughter and The Simpsons on Sundays. Well, you know, the transition seems to be a ploy to enlarge the subscriber base for cable and dish-based providers. I'm worried about the FM-AM digital switch. Will there be a similar business concept? Nothing for free. It truly is a digital wonderland. Randy writes, Dear Mr. Shearer, since you evidently are the only person covering this national story, I'm hopeful you'll be able to help me. Yeah, that's who I am. I'm the helping guy. Living in greater suburban Fresno, I can get... Well, I'm sorry about that. The help would be... I can get most of the major stations most of the time during the day, though our fringe stations are iffy, which is particularly troubling when I'm trying to watch Leave It to Beaver reruns on the Retro Channel. My question is this, why does my digital stream weaken at night? Yes, I'm waiting for you, ladies and gentlemen, to write your own answers to that straight line. This is always a problem, continues Randy, and every channel is subject to messing with the rabbit ears and on our electronophonic amplified antenna. In fact, most nights at 9 p.m., there is no signal for any channel. I can't even get a healthy dose of pixels. I was really looking forward to watching The History Detective on PBS, but could not receive the signal. Please help and advise. The upside of this, of course, is I have much more time to read, watch great old movies rented from the library, and, of course, listen to the show. And Mark writes, Dear Harry, I've been listening to your skepticism of digital TV since I started listening to the show way back in 2005. I live in the middle of nowhere. In Central Florida, that's unlike the guy who lives in the suburbs of Fresno, I guess, and basically presumed that the digital switchover would require an investment of my time and money I was not willing to make. I saw the deadline as the end of my days of being a broadcast television viewer. Since the switchover, I only use my TV to watch the occasional DVD and play video games. When I feel like catching up on my favorite shows, I go on the Internet and watch them on Hulu. It's great because it's on demand and virtually commercial-free. I owe you gratitude for basically scaring me away from TV. I spend a lot of time working out, painting, drawing, and taking part in activities I feel are much more productive than my previous TV-watching habits. Thank you, Mark, from Windermere, Florida. Mark, you are so welcome. My only advice to Matthew? Rescan. It's nighttime. Of course things change. Different animals are around your antenna. It's just a guess, but you won't get better. Hello, welcome to the show. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this week's edition of the show. What a week it's been, ladies and gentlemen. We had the unbelievably edifying spectacle of the President of the United States pointing out that a contretemps, a disagreement, a situation where apparently everybody involved acted poorly, did not use their better judgment. Himself, Professor Gates, and the police sergeant, that all the parties involved acted poorly, and the problem was sobriety. So he's pledged to fix that. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
Sorry.
More about that later, by the way. A week after cursing and swinging at a security guard during a performance in Columbus, Ohio, Anthony Gonzalez, the frontman of the French synth-pop act known as M83, has apologized. "My reactions in the heat of the moment have caused me much regret," wrote Gonzalez, 28. "I sincerely apologize for trying to physically interfere with security staff trying to do their job of ensuring proper protection for both the band and members of the audience." The altercation took place last week at the end of the sold-out show after Gonzalez invited concertgoers to join him on stage. "It can't support the weight of the crowd," says the marketing director for the center. "On stage, dancing isn't typically allowed anyway because of cords, instruments, and other equipment." After offering the same invitation during an encore, just one song, when the staff again intervened to get patrons on stage, offstage, Gonzalez took several swipes at a guard. The video is circulating on YouTube. But don't watch it yet. Wait till the show's over. Dateline Kingston, Jamaica. The Oxford Press has apologized to Jamaicans for its definition of the word maroons in the concise Oxford Dictionary. The University Press apologized for stating that maroons were a member of a maroon is a member of a group of black people descended from runaway slaves and living in parts of Suriname and the West Indies. There was no mention of the Jamaican maroons defeating the British in two wars in the description of the word, and no mention of Nanny, a national hero. The dictionary has promised to correct the anomaly in future editions. Nanny. Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York, where I'll be for two fun-filled days starting tomorrow, has apologized for letting his SUVs idle. That's right, he has SUVs in New York. More than one. He ordered his drivers to stop the practice this week after the AP observed the parked vehicle's engines running for long periods of time throughout the city. Bloomberg said on his weekly radio show, "There's no excuse," and he thoroughly apologizes. He added, "The mayor's cars should set an example and tell the cars to put their hands over their grills when they sneeze. Idling causes pollution and wastes fuel and money." The mayor had no engine idling signs installed months ago in all the Chevrolet Suburbans that transport him. The city's idling limit is 3 minutes, but Bloomberg recently shortened it to 1 minute around schools. The limit does not legally apply to Bloomberg's SUVs, which are classified as emergency vehicles. Out of my way, the mayor's coming. Dateline Los Angeles, Jackson Brown has settled a lawsuit and received an apology from Senator John McCain and the Republican Party over the use of his song "Running on Empty" during last year's presidential campaign. The settlement announced this week includes a pledge by the GOP not to use any musician's work without proper permission in future campaigns, a statement Brown said he hoped would benefit other artists. McCain's loss in November. What? Why don't people tell? Didn't end the lawsuit, which had been slated for trial early next year. Financial details of the settlement were not announced. McCain didn't know about the ad, which was created by the Ohio Republican Party and removed after Brown complained. "We apologize that a portion of the Jackson Brown song was used without permission," said the statement. Amazon.com CEO Jeff Bezos has issued an apology for the way, quote, "we previously handled the illegally sold copies of 1984 and other novels on Kindle. Our solution to the problem is stupid, thoughtless, and painfully out of line with our principles. It is wholly self-inflicted, and we deserve the criticism we've received. We will use the scar tissue from this painful mistake to help make better decisions going forward, ones that match our mission, with deep apology to our customers." Now that's an apology. Okay. You can take crap off my Kindle whenever you want, Jeff, if you apologize like that. Chris Brown. You know who that is. Chris Brown has posted a video on YouTube telling his fans how sorry he is for the assault on Rihanna. He pleaded guilty to assault last month and will serve 5 years on probation. Yeah, he's the guy who assaulted Rihanna. You know who he is. You know who she is. Hey, listen, I can't keep you up on everything. I'm here. Don't worry about me. Just thinking. Anyway, he said, since February, my attorneys advised me not to speak out, even though ever since the incident, I wanted to publicly express my deepest regret and accept full responsibility. I felt it was time you hear directly from me that I am sorry. I cannot go into what happened. And most importantly, I'm not going to sit here and make any excuses. I take great pride in me being able to exercise self-control, and what I did was inexcusable. I am very saddened and very ashamed of what I have done. I've told Rihanna countless times, I'm telling you today, I'm truly sorry I wasn't able to handle the situation both differently and better. I intend to live my life so I'm truly worthy of the term role model. Unquote, Chris Brown. Don't watch that until after the show. Get off of YouTube. Deluged with complaints about her conduct, District Attorney Dolores Carr in San Jose publicly apologized this week for failing to see that her husband's financial involvement with the victim's family in a murder case her office is handling raised conflict of interest questions. Her husband was paid $14,000 by an attorney for the slain victim's family, who had filed a separate lawsuit. With that payment, the Santa Clara County DA, in effect, was receiving income from an advocate for the victim's family, even though she was prosecuting the case and deliberating whether to seek the death penalty, which the family strongly advocates. I made mistakes, and I regret it. She said, I regret the situation. I will not make those mistakes again. She has disqualified herself from the case. Other California government apologies. Atwater City California Councilman Gary Frago. This is not Atwater, the neighborhood in Los Angeles. This is Atwater, the little city near Modesto in Central California. Ooh, it's hot up there. Gary Frago has apologized after forwarding emails to city officials and others containing jokes aimed at President Obama, the First Lady, and black people. How much of this have we heard this year? This is going around. This is worse than swine flu in terms of its prevalence. I made a mistake, he said of the 7 emails circulated from October to February. Yeah, you made one a month, I guess, for 4 months. It was a mistake I shouldn't have made, and I apologize for it. I wasn't being racist. I was just passing on emails. Some residents have called for his resignation, and several city council members have distanced themselves from him. I'll be sitting over here now. The local newspaper published emails that Frago forwarded to local officials from his private email account. The story made its way to a national audience. It was then that Frago realized he had offended people. He said, I didn't think it would go nationwide, to tell you the truth. If it would have stayed local, we would have been able to handle it a lot easier, he said. He will not resign. The city still refuses to provide additional emails sent by Frago. The city said those emails are not public documents because they do not pertain to city business. We'll see about that. Boston Red Sox outfielder Jason Bay said he hopes Major League Baseball has learned a lesson after airing a recorded version of O Canada prior to last week's All-Star game. Major League Baseball, apologized for the faux pas and explained that a tight schedule prevented it from having a live performance. Sheryl Crow sang the Star-Spangled Banner live. Now, I'm going to interrupt this just for a moment to say, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know about the All-Star game, but at the Super Bowl, I'll bet you, 9 times out of 10, when you see a singer singing a song at the Super Bowl, Star-Spangled Banner or not, they're lip-syncing. So the issue here would be whether they had somebody up there to lip-sync a recording. I think it means everything, said Bay, the Red Sox outfielder. A lot of people were upset, myself included. I don't think Major League Baseball understood that it would have the magnitude it did. Bay hails from Trail, British Columbia, but became an American citizen in Boston on July 2nd. So you might ask, what's his beef? Did he really renounce his Canadian citizenship? Can we check this? And can I get a copy of his birth certificate while we're at it? And yours, by the way. I don't want you listening unless you're a citizen. Sorry. Got a little head up there. Time Warner Cable in Los Angeles has issued a statement apologizing for the inconvenience with during the Dodgers game. Please accept our sincere apologies for the inconvenience you had. I know how frustrating that could be, especially during the time of home run. What do you mean we should hire citizens? Dateline Trenton, New Jersey. Wayne Bryant, a once powerful New Jersey. Hey, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, as a part-time New Orleanian, I am very proud to note this week the announcement that New Jersey is the most corrupt state in the union. All right, go Jersey. Wayne Bryant, a once powerful New Jersey state senator convicted on bribery and pension fraud, was sentenced Friday to 4 years in federal prison. Bryant apologized for his crimes before he was sentenced. Quote, I cannot express how deeply sorry I am for the scorn my actions have caused. Scorn. It's just the scorn, he minds. Continental Airlines apologized this week to former Indian President APJ Abdul Kalam for frisking him before a recent flight to New York. The apology came a day after Indian Civil Aviation authorities lodged a police complaint against the U.S. carrier in New Delhi, accusing it of gross violation of Indian security protocols that forbid pre-embarkation body checks on a number of dignitaries, including former presidents. Quote, our intention was never to offend Dr. Kalam or the sentiments of the people of India. We have tendered a formal apology, and we sincerely hope he will fly with us again, says Continental. It's an ashamed bird. New York Representative Carolyn Maloney, a Democrat, apologized this week for using the N-word in a recent interview while recounting a phone call she received. I apologized for having repeated a word I find disgusting. It's no excuse, she said, but I was so caught up in relaying the story exactly as it was told to me that in doing so, I repeated a word that should never be repeated. Spandau Ballet, remember them? They've apologized after more than 20 years for terrorizing a fellow 80s pop star with sandwiches. The band confessed to bombarding synth pop star Howard Jones, remember him, with food when they were bored in a dressing room at a Belgian award show. It gets better and better. A Belgian award show, ladies and gentlemen. Spandau, soon to start a comeback tour, told the September edition of Q magazine they were sorry for the incident. Good timing, just as you're about to announce and embark on a tour. Western Union has apologized to Robert Napoli of stock analyst firm Piper Jaffray after a man posing as Robert Napoli infiltrated the money transfer firm's conference call and cursed at Chief Executive Officer Christina Gold. That was not me, Napoli said in a telephone interview. Napoli said Western Union sent an email to me and apologized for the person using my name. 70 years late, the state of California has formally apologized to the thousands of Chinese immigrants who helped build the state. Many are no longer alive, but their children and grandchildren had pushed for such an apology. The state assembly adopted a resolution expressing profound regret for the persecution of Chinese immigrants who in the 1880s and 90s performed the dangerous work of cobbling together California's nascent infrastructure, although they were denied civil liberties. The bill does not seek any financial compensation for Chinese who were mistreated or denied liberties. And if it did, where would California get the money? The secretary of the Likud faction in the Israeli parliament, Aliza Barashi, has apologized for calling a member of the parliament, Orly Levy Abakasis, a bimbo. Bimbo, go back to modeling, Barashi told Levy Abakasis outside the parliament as she tried to urge Levy Abakasis, a former model and TV presenter, to vote in favor of reform. Levy Abakasis said she could not in good conscience vote for the reform and intended to abstain. She was deeply hurt after being called a bimbo, burst into tears, and locked herself in the bathroom for several minutes. It's the only reason I read you that item. The response. Sarah Palin hasn't done that yet. Deadline Bucharest, Romania. A Romanian mayor has apologized for dressing up in a Nazi uniform, saying he's not a fascist or an anti-Semite. Constanta Mayor Radu Mazari wrote in an open letter that he wanted to express his regret to people offended. His gesture to protests. He said in his letter he was trying to draw attention to the courage of a Nazi officer who opposed Hitler. Retail giant Walmart is apologizing to a British Columbia mother who was apparently asked to move to a washroom when she started to breastfeed in public at one of the chain's stores in Langford outside Victoria. And We have a couple more apologies. First up, this is a doctor from Florida, Dr. David McCallop, who was opposing Barack Obama's health care plan, and in the course of such opposition, sent out an email depicting Obama as an African witch doctor. Here's the doctor.
So, you know, I want to apologize for that terrible image that I helped to get circulated. I sent it to about 150, maybe 200 people, and then it somehow took off. And, you know, all I really want to do is make sure that patients get the best medical care. And I've been fighting that fight. I'm very concerned that the proposals that are coming will make patients not be able to trust their doctors because insurance companies and the governments will be in charge of the care they can receive. And that has been shown to hurt a lot of people. So
no.
I didn't recognize how much I had hurt people until I had, heard from and recognized the voices of so many people calling in and emailing me and saying, you know, you're setting back progress for America. And as I reflected on that, as I thought about it, it seemed the only way that I could, begin to make amends was to apologize. And that's what I'm doing. I want to apologize for this very bad mistake. And in addition, I agree with the representative that I need to find other ways to serve my community, other ways to help people. And so at this point, I will resign as a president-elect of Pinellas County Medical Association so that group, which is an outstanding group, can continue their mission of helping patients and won't be distracted by my presence.
Okay. And here's what I think is fair, though, doctor. And of course, he's not calling into this show. I think just to make everything square, you should go on a little tour of Florida at the very least, dressed as a witch doctor. Now, here's Brian Kilmeade, a co-host of Fox and Friends on Fox News Channel. Earlier, he had been discussing something, had observed that you can't compare Americans with Swedes because Swedes have, quote, pure genes, unquote, while Americans, quote, keep marrying other species and ethnics.
On July 8th, while we were discussing a study on marriage and Alzheimer's that was conducted in Sweden and Finland, I made comments that were offensive to many people. That was not my intention, and looking back at those comments, I realized they were inappropriate. For that, I sincerely apologize. America, huge melting pot, and that is what makes us such a great country. Steve?
Species. That's the part. I didn't hear the apology mentioned species and ethnics. But he apologized. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast.
It's summertime, 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 summertime. summertime, summertime, some, summertime, 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 some, summertime, 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 some, summertime,
summertime, summertime, some, summertime, summertime.
It's summertime.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. The Obama administration, you remember them, has declined requests from UN human rights investigators for information on secret prisons and for private interviews with inmates at Gitmo, according to UN officials, dampening their hopes of greater U.S. cooperation on human rights issues. This is the Obama administration. This is in the Washington Post, but didn't get much attention here. The rebuffs are the latest instances of U.S. government resisting international human rights organizations' efforts to learn about Bush administration practices. Apparently, we really don't want to look back. In June, Hillary Clinton turned down a request from the top UN anti-torture official for a meeting in Washington to discuss practices at secret CIA detention centers and at Gitmo, despite the administration's avowed commitment to being open to greater scrutiny by the United Nations. Two separate UN human rights researchers separately requested visits to Gitmo in recent months and were turned down. "It was not a no-no," said one. "It was a diplomatic no." The two and two other UN experts also requested details on the secret CIA prison's history, locations, and detainees. The answer received from the United States is meaningless. There is no meaningful information. They're just repeating that the Obama administration stopped using secret places of detention. U.S. officials say they support the work of the UN human rights researchers, but they're constrained in releasing information on sensitive intelligence matters. They insist they have not formally closed the door on visits to Gitmo. U.S. efforts to engage the UN have been slowed because several key diplomatic positions in the Obama administration are still open or have just been filled. And from the Age newspaper in Australia, an official inquiry into the combat death of an Australian soldier reveals serious failings by the Afghan troops he was mentoring, highlighting the massive task facing foreign forces in building the Afghan army. The inquiry report shows Afghan troops played only a limited role when a joint Australian-Afghan patrol came under intense Taliban fire, even though the Afghans are likely to have formed the bulk of the patrol. And it shows that Australian soldiers who were meant to support the Afghans, supposedly leading the patrol, had to take charge amidst a fierce and chaotic battle. The heavily censored Army report found medical intervention would not have saved the life of a corporal who was shot to death. Teams are helping to train Afghan National Army so it can take charge of security and allow foreign troops to leave. Where have we heard that plan before? We're always doing that. The Australian Defense Minister said last week that task could take up to 5 years. The report shows the complexity of the task, hinting at disputes between Australian and Afghan soldiers, the flaws of some Afghan commanders, and wider failings by the Afghan army. In public comments, the Australians referred to cultural challenges in mentoring Afghan troops. In private, some were scathing, particularly towards the Afghan commander, who they complained was obstructive, lazy, reluctant to fight, and unwilling to conduct the detailed planning that's normal for Australian troops. At first we go here, and then we go here. So it's obstructive, lazy, reluctant to fight. I like that. I like those odds. The inquiry report just hints at the tension, saying planning for operations in support of the Afghan National Army lacks certainty due to the disparate nature of the Afghan National Army and individual commanders. The report reveals Afghan soldiers played little part in the actual battle. Yeah, and we're, how deep? Are we knee deep? Are we hip deep? Nipple deep? How deep are we there? Also, from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, this if you're a lover of irony, come on. It don't get any better than this. Iraq this week asked key nations on the United Nations Security Council to lift sanctions against Iraq left over from the Saddam Hussein era, including those related to the production of weapons of mass destruction. That's right, Iraq wants us to allow them to make WMDs now. Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki spoke to the UN Secretary General, then individually with representatives from the five permanent members of the Security Council, in an effort to persuade them that with Hussein gone, Iraq is no longer dangerous. The United Nations has gradually pulled back the sanctions it had imposed on Iraq. However, restrictions connected to potential nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons activities have remained in place. And Baghdad is still not allowed to field missiles that could fly more than 93 miles. The Secretary General has launched a review of the situation, and his report will be issued shortly. Washington supports an end to the sanctions, but concerns from Kuwait could extend the process. Come on, write your congressman. WMDs for Iraq, now more than ever. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs confirmed this very morning that Officer Crowley and Professor Gates will be invited to the White House for that beer.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Hey, Sergeant, you finished your first one. You're entitled. Isn't that right, Skip?
Mr. President, I've got to say, if I had to get arrested to taste a lager this good, it was worth it.
For the good times, for the bad times, for all the times, beer makes it happen.
Oh, sorry, Mr. President.
Oh, that's okay. They got people here for that. You okay, Crowley?
Oh, I'm way okay. Where's the head?
For the high life, for the low life, beer brings people together.
Okay, now, Skip, no more talking to cops about their moms, right?
No, not even about their papas.
So, you're not going to arrest them today, Sergeant?
Can't.
Oh?
I think I've lost the cuffs.
In the White House or your house, beer belongs. The Beer Foundation reminds you, beer.
Now I got to go talk to Gaddafi.
It's what you want to be near. Always intoxicate responsibly.
De meros hips com um falso alarme. Economistas, médicos, políticos apenas nos tratavam com escárnio. Nossas visões se revelaram válidas e eles se calaram, mas é tarde. As noites estão ficando meio cálidas e um Mato Grosso em chamas longe arde. O verde em cinza se converte logo, logo. É fogo.
É fogo.
É fogo. Éramos uns poetas loucos místicos, éramos tudo que não era ação. Agora são contados estatísticos os cientistas que nos dão razão. De que valeu em suma a suma lógica do máximo consumo de hoje em dia. De uma bárbara marcha tecnológica e da fé cega na tecnologia. Há só um sentimento que é de dó e de malogro. É fogo.
É fogo.
É fogo.
É fogo.
É fogo.
É fogo.
Doce morada bela, rica e única, dilapidada só como se fosses a mina da fortuna econômica, a fonte eterna de energias fósseis. O que será com mais alguns graus Celsius de um rio, uma Bahia ou um Recife? Ou um ilhéu ao léu clamando aos céus se os mares subirem muito em Tenerife? E dos sem água, o que será de cada súplica, de cada rogo? É fogo.
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 A Antártida, deixamos nossa marca no planeta. Aliviemos já a pior parte da tragédia anunciada com trombeta. O estrago vai ser pago pela gente toda. É foda.
É fogo.
É fogo.
É fogo.
É fogo.
É fogo.
É tudo em jogo. É foda.
an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
News of the inspector general, ladies and gentlemen. And this, Better Late Than Never Department. In the wake of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, the Federal Emergency Management Agency was slow to address early signs of formaldehyde problems in emergency housing and overstated the actions it was taking to address the problem. No, really? According to a report this week by the Inspector General of... What is the Inspector General? Doesn't say. Thanks, CNN. The highly critical 80-page report paints the picture of an agency that was overly concerned with its image to the detriment of the public. FEMA says the report reacted to the formaldehyde health threat only after media attention grew to disturbing levels. You're welcome. And once delayed testing so the agency could develop a public communication strategy. Federal tests found formaldehyde in emergency housing in October of 2005, just 2 months after the disaster. Most of the tests weren't done until 2 years later. During winter, when formaldehyde levels are lowest, the report says, just as you heard on this broadcast years ago. Because of the delays, the test results may have underestimated the extent of formaldehyde exposure that residents had experienced, says the report. The Inspector General's report chronicles initial efforts to address the problem. FEMA officials did make some attempts to identify the extent of the formaldehyde problem, but they did so by trying to get an accurate tally of complaints from occupants rather than testing. In hindsight, it says a number of factors created a perfect storm for development of formaldehyde problems after Katrina. One prime factor, the report said, was that before the storms, complaints about formaldehyde levels in FEMA trailers had not surfaced, and therefore FEMA officials were unaware that this should have been an issue of concern, i.e., the fact that it was new stunned them into inaction. And among other factors, all of the units were some form of manufactured housing, which tend to have more manufactured wood products that can emit the gas. Most of the trailers were hurried from factories to the Gulf and didn't have time to release the dangerous gases. That speaks well for FEMA's advanced planning, doesn't it? The trailers were placed in hot, humid climates, increasing formaldehyde levels. Sad that that's where most hurricanes happen, isn't it? And amid high numbers of children, the elderly, and people with prior health problems. Those were the people living in FEMA trailers. All three have heightened sensitivity to formaldehyde. Oh, I say, this is the Inspector General for the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, is FEMA's parent department. FEMA, in its defense, says the document does not adequately emphasize the compelling fact that there were no established formaldehyde standards for travel trailers. How about for inhabited dwellings? The U.S. Agency for International Development funded programs that rebuilt Iraqi mosques and used biblical lessons to promote sexual abstinence in Africa, despite a prohibition on the use of taxpayer funds to support inherently religious activities, according to a new audit by the AID's Inspector General. The agency challenged the findings in a written response, saying the main goals of its programs in Africa and Iraq were secular in nature. These were projects initiated from 2006 to 2007 under the Bush administration. That's right, rebuilding mosques is a secular activity. Four mosques in Fallujah. As part of one faith-based abstinence program in Africa, officials conducted a session urging youth to memorize and recite Psalm 119:9, which says, quote, "How can a young man keep his way pure? By living according to your word." Participants were then instructed to recite the passage's key concept, quote, "God has a plan for sex, and this plan will help you and protect you from harm." The agency said the materials were religiously infused but showed no preference for Christian groups. They also maintained the mosque repairs were aimed at gaining political support and providing jobs. Speaking of which, the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, you know, the mammoth thing, largest and most costly ever, is overstaffed and must be reduced to a size more in keeping with the evolving U.S.-Iraq relationship and budget constraints, said the State Department's Inspector General this week. Although the U.S. presence in Iraq will become more civilian as the military withdraws over the next 2 years, the embassy should be able to carry out all of its responsibilities with significantly fewer staff and in a much reduced footprint. Now they tell us the reduction has to begin immediately after they built the huge thing, you see. I guess because they never thought we'd leave. And the U.S. Army has acknowledged that the nerve gas leak monitors at a Kentucky chemical weapons storage depot were not working for nearly 2 years. The admission is contained in the U.S. Army Inspector General report dated 3 years ago, but released this week. Managers of chemical weapons storage at the Bluegrass Army Depot, 30 miles south of Lexington, Kentucky, had rendered the detectors inoperative, and the problem was remedied only after a whistleblower was forced to file a complaint, according to the Inspector General investigation. Bluegrass Army Depot stores 523 tons of chemical weapons. If Saddam had done that, we'd have invaded. News of the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. So the economy is looking, well, we don't know yet. There are, I think, housing starts went up for the last 3 months. There are some indicators. Of course, unemployment is still going up. California is a basket case. So it's a mixed report. However, on the plus side of the ledger, Goldman Sachs reported earnings for the second quarter this year, what, $2, $3, $4 billion, paying giant bonuses to its employees already again? It's business as usual. And business as usual for Goldman Sachs is pretty good because, let's see, the last two or three Treasury secretaries have all been alumni of Goldman Sachs. The head of the New York Fed, which is the closest regulator to the financial industry. I don't know if the current one, but the previous one came from Goldman Sachs. A lot of migration from Goldman Sachs to the offices of the federal government that regulate businesses like Goldman Sachs. So as I say, business as usual has been good.
When Mr. Goldman met Mr. Sachs, business ran on railroad tracks. The work was simpler, you can forget, when Messer Sachs and Goldman met. Said Mr. Goldman, for years and years, our guys have got the most between the ears. Said Mr. Sachs, let's unhook the reins, find new ways to profit from our traitor's brains. Spinning gold out of flax, Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs. Spinning gold out of flax, Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs. Under Bill Clinton, said Sachs with glee, our former chief now runs the Treasury. Smiled Mr. Goldman to Mr. Sachs, everything's okay, we can relax. We're blowing bubbles, Mr. Goldman crowed, we're making money on the money owed. On Wall Street our names should be put on plaques, bubbled Mr. Goldman to Mr. Sachs. Balls so big, they stretch the slacks of Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs. Balls so big, they stretch the slacks of Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs. The century's turning, Mr. Sachs opined, our new kind of trades just boggle the mind. Racked Mr. Goldman with a toss of his head, one of our guys runs the New York Fed. Said Mr. Sachs, as the market soared, we're totally wired in each department and board. We regulate ourselves, the next best thing to no tax, mused a jolly Mr. Goldman to apply Mr. Sachs.
the regulators are really quacks. For Mr. Golden and Mr. Sachs, their regulators are really quacks. For Mr. Golden and Mr. Sachs.
He said, Mr. Golden to Mr. Sachs, our fine little system is showing some cracks. Mr. Sachs to Mr. Goldman said, we got it covered. Go back to bed. Paulson's our man, Mr. Sachs recalled. We may get a haircut, but we won't go bald. Amy Bailoff rules will be comfy and lax. Mr. Goldman was reassured by Mr. Sachs. Bear Stearns just went down, Mr. Sachs told his friend. And Lehman Brothers has met a harsher end. Merrill Lynch was sold off by a fax. A doer, Mr. Goldman told Mr. Sachs. It's time, Mr. Goldman said, to pull some rank. So presto, said Mr. Sachs, we'll become a bank. We'll be backed up by the payers of tax. Chortled Mr. Goldman to Mr. Sachs. Mr. Sachs complained, we're insured by AIG. Mr. Goldman responded, that's fine with me. Our risky bets are gonna be paid off in full, said Mr. Goldman, more than ever, a raging bull. Unemployment is rising, Mr. Goldman observes, while their partnership is still thriving on nerve. Profits in the billions, just ignore the attacks, says a flush Mr. Goldman to a flush Mr. Sachs. Spinning gold out of flax, Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs. Spinning gold out of flax, Mr. Goldman and Mr. Sachs.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's not just us. Tests of a missile defense system meant to shield Israel from Iranian attack were aborted three times over the past week because of various malfunctions. Which will be in good shape first, digital television or missile defense? Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week over at the same time over these same stations, NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet, you've heard of it, at two different locations, live and archived. HarryShear.com and KCRW.com. Available for your smartphone through the good folks at Stitcher.com. Available as a free download for members at www.audible.com/LeShow. Available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And it'd be just like the tests not being called off, if you'd agree to join with me then. Well, you already, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Hey, you know what? Let's all meet at the White House for a beer. What do you say? A tip of the show, chapeau to the Chicago, Pittsburgh, San Diego, and Hawaii desks. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on, normally available at the ever-burgeoning harryshearer.com. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Surf's up, everybody.